This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, and it's Wednesday, so that means Wednesdays with Wes. Wes Reynolds joins me right now, who never thought I'd say it, Wes, but we're enemies, man, for the next 9 days or so as the bracket shows up, Indiana versus Notre Dame. I texted you on Saturday night when things started to play out, and I said, you know, I think we might get Indiana-Notre Dame. You agreed, and lo and behold, we have a battle of the Hoosier State in South Bend on Friday, December 20th.
Yeah, the battle lines are certainly drawn, and it became more of a reality, I think, once it was like, okay, I don't think Texas is going to drop that much for losing to Georgia. And then Penn State, their losses are to Ohio State and Oregon, so you didn't feel like they were going to drop. So it was kind of like Notre Dame, even with just the one loss, being it to Northern Illinois, that they were going to be in either that 7 or 8. They get the 7. A big deal for all the reversible jacket crowd that we joke about in the state of Indiana, because there's a lot of Indiana graduates and fans that haven't been able to claim Indiana football, and they're Notre Dame fans in the fall, and then they come back home for the winter with Indiana basketball. But no dice now. If you weren't there for the pain, you can't be there for the triumph. So, you know, if they want to go ahead and root for the Irish, good for them. But we'll see how much red gets in Notre Dame Stadium next Friday. I'm trying to be one of those reds, but there's not going to be a lot. I don't think. I know that that's been going around. Hey, let's keep the red out of the stadium. But this may be, who knows, this may be the only opportunity you get Indiana in a situation like this. So very, very happy to see it, considering this program, by the way, has not won a bowl game since 1991. So it's not like Indiana's been going to a bowl every single year for the last 30 years. This is tall cotton that the Hoosiers are in come Friday.
Well, and that was the last time Notre Dame played Indiana, was in 1991.
First game on NBC. Yeah,
49-27, Notre Dame win over Indiana. I'm going to go on a limb and say it's not going to be 49-27 this time around.
Jerome Bettis, by the way, is out of eligibility, right? So is Irv Smith, I hope.
Yeah. Jeremiah Love, though, is healthy, which is good news for Irish fans. He got dinged up against USC. There was concern that could be a serious injury. Not the case. Notre Dame also will get Howard Cross back, their inside defensive lineman who's been out the last couple of games. I want to preface it this way. We'll get into Notre Dame in Indiana. I think next week is going to be the week when we really deep dive it. Wes and I will go through all the quarterfinal games. But I just wanted to jump in here. We got bowl games moving. We got opt-outs left and right. But obviously, this is a game you and I will very much break down. And dare I say, there will be no podcast with a more in-depth Notre Dame-Indiana breakdown than this one next Wednesday. But initial thoughts on this game. I know in the picks page I saw an Indiana play come in. So what led you to get to the window initially on the Hoosiers?
Yeah, and it was the only game I bet so far. I did take an 8, even though there's a couple 8s out there, but mostly 7.5. And I think it's probably, Tim, going to stay around that number. I could see maybe some under money coming in gradually. It's 51 now, I think. Even though the weather conditions this far in advance don't seem like they're all that bad, but it is going to be cold and it's going to be on a Friday night. So I could see the under getting bet against two teams that obviously want to run the ball. But I think Indiana, when you look at the game against Ohio State, you're going to see the result of the final score, 38-15. It's like, well, Indiana came up lame against the top opponent on the road. Maybe they're going to do so again. But if you look at that game, there was the bad snap. It wasn't even a bad snap. It was just the punter dropping the ball. Ohio State recovers it at their own 7. They get a touchdown the next play right before the half. They also had a punt return. But if you go inside the numbers, the offense for Indiana after that first drive was obviously poor. They couldn't protect Curtis Rourke. Running backs were missing their assignments. And I think the offensive line got its butt kicked by Ohio State's defensive line. But on the other side of the trenches, I thought Indiana held up very well. If you take out that 39-yard run at the end by Travion Henderson where he slid down like at the 2, they had held Ohio State to like 76 rushing yards on about 28 carries. So I think from a defensive line standpoint and a front seven standpoint, they may not get overwhelmed, even though this is a different challenge with Notre Dame, mainly because Riley Leonard has rushed for 14 touchdowns and over 700 yards this year. So, you know, you can't just focus just on Jeremiah Love. You got to focus on stopping the quarterback as well. But I don't feel like they're going to get overwhelmed necessarily on that side of the ball. But the offense certainly has got to do a better job of protecting Curtis Rourke, because you can make some pass plays down the field, as you well know, watching every Notre Dame game. You can, if he's got time, he's going to be able to make some throws down the field. So I took a 7.5 or an 8. Maybe part of it is a homer play being in the playoff, but I think that they can compete. And I also think one side note that you don't want to put too much stock in, but you certainly want to acknowledge, is that Kurt Cignetti is very well adept at preparing for these playoffs, albeit not on this big of a stage as he's going to get next Friday night, but at IU Pennsylvania, Division II, FCS, Elon, James Madison. So he's used to road games. Now, not at Notre Dame Stadium, but he's used to the prep, at least, I think, for this. And really all these coaches too. Yeah, they're prepping for these games, but they're also, you know, working portal time.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you have to, I think, now in this day and age.
Yeah, it's crazy right now that the schedule is ridiculous with, you know, players in the portal. And if you want to stay one step ahead, you've got to keep an eye on the portal. And these staffs are massive, so they're keeping an eye on the portal. And Kirk Cignetti even said as much when he was interviewed, I think, on CBS Sports HQ, I want to say, on Sunday regarding this particular matchup. But yeah, I mean, we'll dive into it, as I mentioned, a little bit more. I agree with what you mentioned regarding the corners. Benjamin Morrison is Notre Dame's top pro prospect. He's out for the year, dealing with a hip injury. And you saw Christian Gray, Notre Dame's corner, get picked on against USC until he ultimately got the pick that I know many backers of USC remember quite well, the 99-yard pick six. So I can't wait for this one. I was quietly hoping for this matchup, not in the sense that I felt like Notre Dame had an edge. I just thought it would bring juice. You know, and this is no knock to SMU, but I really wanted the game on Friday night for multiple reasons. One is that I'm hopping town on the 21st, Wes. So I needed to have full eyes on this game, and that fortunately is happening. But I think Indiana, if it was going to be Alabama, those types of games would have brought some extra juice, I think, to this matchup. SMU, I think, would have just been a little like, it's kind of like what Penn State SMU right now is. And while SMU is a capable team, I do think bringing Indiana, having, you know, Cignetti be as loud as he has been, both these teams being 11-1, I think it's going to bring a lot to it. And College Game Day is headed there, so that'll be a cool scene to see. College Game Day will be at both Notre Dame and then Ohio State the next day. So I would agree with you. I think under would be probably the way I would look right now. The concern I would have right now would be, let's wait and see what the weather's going to do. You know, we haven't had games like this before where weather could play a factor. I'll also say this about Notre Dame in a negative light, which is their kicking game is an absolute disaster right now. Mitch Jeter, the transfer from South Carolina, has been dealing with an injury, and they've just been trying to give him kind of easy field goals, and he has been unable to put them through. He missed a 28-yarder against USC. So if this game is tight, that's an issue that I think people need to keep an eye on. Notre Dame's kicking game is a nightmare right now. So certainly something in a close game that could be an issue for the Irish moving forward. But yeah, fascinated to see how this one plays. I'll ask you this, because statistically speaking, Indiana is one of the best run defenses in the country, but have they faced a rush offense like the one they're going to face next Friday night with Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price and Riley Leonard? I mean, that three-headed monster is one of the more capable backfields in the country.
To be fair, probably not. You know, you look Indiana since week 8, number 1 in EPA per rush nationally. But look, I think Ohio State has a good rush offense that Indiana did keep at bay. Now, Will Howard, not as much of a running threat, clearly, as Riley Leonard. Michigan, maybe a little bit, because, but I think with Michigan, too, they've been so one-dimensional. and not being able to make plays down the field, but they're still very physical and a very talented offensive line, and having Donovan Edwards there in the backfield. Notre Dame is clearly the step up in class, though, in terms of a really what I would call elite rush offense. So, you know, that's a fair point. You got to take a lot of these numbers when you look at it in terms of consideration. And at the same time, you got to look at Notre Dame. You know, when's the last time, maybe against Louisville, that game that had like a million turnovers back and forth, when's the last time Notre Dame, I guess, has really been tested? I know USC was within a score there in the fourth quarter, but Notre Dame has had, I don't want to call them easy games, but...
No, it's okay. You know, I mean, their schedule has not been challenging. I mean, they played, they played Army and Navy, and it was another level. And, Notre Dame was prepared for it. They were not going to be fooled by the triple option, and they quickly destroyed both Army and Navy. But I think it's a fair question to ask. You know, Louisville was, as you pointed out, a game. I think they were outgained in that one, but they fumbled the opening kickoff. Notre Dame did, and Louisville went in for a score. It was a very wonky game. Notre Dame won that by a touchdown. But I would say there was some legitimate game pressure against USC. Tied at the half. You know, Jeremiah Love goes down with an injury. And to your point, right, USC's got the ball with, 4 minutes to go and trying to go into the end zone to tie the game. So outside of USC, I think it's a fair point. Notre Dame has not really been tested all that much since they lost to Northern Illinois. They have just destroyed everybody in their way, and they were, to an extent, outside of Louisville and USC, pretty inferior foes.
The SOS, I think, ended up being Indiana 67, Notre Dame 59. So, you know, not a huge gap there. And look, some of these teams that are bigger brand names were down, like Stanford and Florida State and Virginia, Georgia Tech a little bit with Haynes King being injured. So, you know, this is certainly a step up in class for Indiana, though, in terms of stopping that running game. But that's been the strength of the team, because you look at that depth chart. A lot of these are guys that came with Cignetti from James Madison, or guys that they got in the portal that are, you know, graduate transfers or fifth year seniors. So these are experienced guys, I think, on this front seven. And I don't think this time around the moment is going to be too big for him. And maybe it wasn't against Ohio State, considering Indiana got out to a 7-0 lead. But, you know, you go on the road, it's your first, like, real hostile environment, because at Michigan State wasn't all that hostile. At UCLA, rather, wasn't all that hostile. And you had plenty of road support there. But at Ohio State, that was the first, like, biggie. And then Indiana made some uncharacteristic mistakes, missing pass protections, the drop of the punt that led directly to Ohio State points, special teams errors. And so when you see those things, you do kind of worry a little bit when they go against better competition.
All right, more on this game next week. Also, Wes has a write-up on it, a best bet, easy for me to say, in our college football betting guide, which will be out on Thursday. So the only way to get that is to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. I was thumbing through the best bets, and boy, we've got a lot of them. So it's exciting to see how many people were involved in that VSiN college football playoff / bowl betting guide. Before we go any further, I don't know if it doesn't really have anything to do from a betting standpoint, but it certainly looks like it's going to happen. I can't believe it. Bill Belichick is apparently, according to Inside Carolina, going to be the next head coach of UNC. As the article states, in a stunning development that has progressed from implausible to an actuality, North Carolina is finalizing a contract to land Bill Belichick as its next head coach, Inside Carolina learned from multiple sources on Wednesday. So as we look at this from a betting standpoint, and this will be more of an off-season discussion, and who knows how it all will play out, but first blush, Wes, on this, are we going to be fading North Carolina next year, or are we going to be betting on North Carolina next year?
Yeah, look, I wish I had a definitive answer, but it's kind of an I don't know yet.
Right.
Look, you got to see, you know, what they're going to do in terms of the recruiting classes. Bryce Baker, who's a highly touted quarterback, you got to get him signed and you know, make sure that he's certainly in the fold. Who's going to be the assistants? and whatnot. It's certainly interesting because you felt like North Carolina might go with like a younger coach, because that was kind of the knock on Mac, is that like, okay, he's kind of more of a CEO. He's a little more disengaged now. He's a little bit older in his second run down there in Chapel Hill. But North Carolina elects to go with Chapel Bill, apparently, here, because that's what it's going to be. Now, who are going to be the assistants? You would think that his son, Steve, is going to come in. And he did a really good job as defensive coordinator at Washington this year. So that's not like a total nepo hire. He's certainly a capable coach. But is he going to be the head coach designate? That has yet to come out. So, you know, North Carolina, people have always looked at that as like a sleeping giant job because of obviously the stature of the university. And, you know, that there is good talent. You can recruit all over the Southeast and really on the East Coast and pretty much everywhere. That there was like, man, this could be a program that could be a sleeping giant, that they could win a little bit more here at North Carolina. So, yeah, look, he's taken a different challenge. And maybe it shouldn't surprise me based on I remember seeing him when he was still his last year with the Patriots. I believe he and Bob Kraft were on when Army Navy was up in Foxborough. And, you know, Belichick's father, of course, was a Navy assistant, and he born and grew up in Annapolis, Maryland. So hearing him talk about that rivalry and hearing him talk about college football, maybe it shouldn't be a total shock, even though I think all of us expected, OK, he's going to go to like the Cowboys, or he's going to take one more shot at Don Shula's record in the NFL because of the comments Don Shula before he passed made about Deflategate. So it was like he really wants to beat Don Shula. He really wants to get that record. And now he doesn't appear to have the opportunity to do that anymore.
Yeah. Speaking of Army Navy, let's jump into it. The last regular season game of the year. And I wish that the number was still out there. I think I see one shop still hanging it offshore. It's 6.5 across the board. I would guess it will get back to 7. I've actually seen a little bit of over money come in. Right now, we'll say 6.5, 39 is where we are on this game. Obviously, the history would tell us the under is the play to make. But when it hit 7 on Monday, I had to grab 7 with Navy here. And, you know, I felt like this was a bit of an overreaction, Wes, to what we saw on Friday night. Shouts to Army for absolutely obliterating Tulane. Dominant performance. But look, these two teams know each other so well. And if you're giving me a full touchdown with a total less than 40, I'm going to have to grab it. But we'll see how this plays out from a point spread standpoint. My guess would be if you look at some maybe squarer shops, if I put up the air quotes, maybe we get back to 7 before game time. What's your thoughts on Army-Navy? Saturday, 3 o'clock, this game will be on CBS and at Northwest Stadium, the home of the Commanders there in Landover, Maryland.
Yeah, I'm with you. I would want to see a 7 here, and maybe I might have to buy it minus $1.20 or $1.15.
I think you'll get there. Don't you think you'll get back there?
I would certainly think so, because, of course, Army coming in, you would say, on much better form, dominating Tulane in that AAC championship game. And then they're already up to, what, 2 touchdown favorites against Marshall. I forget the name of the bowl. We'll get to that one. Yeah, exactly.
The Radiance Technology Independence Bowl.
Okay, in Shreveport. And then Navy gets Oklahoma and Fort Worth in the Armed Forces Bowl. No look ahead, obviously. This is Army-Navy. No look ahead here. This is the game. This is how your season is judged. 17-1 to the under in this series. The only over was the double overtime 2 years ago. Part of me is tempted to take the over here, because these offenses, I think, are more dynamic than they usually are. They're not your typical just pure triple option offenses. They run some different personnel. Both defenses have shown some leaks at times throughout the season. I would want Navy plus 7. Navy, I think, has played a little bit of the tougher schedule this year, certainly than Army has. It's been underdogs in military academy games, I think, are on like a 22-6 run. So this would be dog or nothing for me. Army did surprise me a little bit with just how they whacked Tulane. Maybe not that they won, because they're always a game underdog, and the game was at home at Mikey Stadium in West Point. But I was just surprised how much they dominated them in the line of scrimmage. It felt like every time they had a fourth and one, they got it. Every single time. Like, what was that drive in the second half? Like, well over 10 minutes that spanned two quarters and really put Tulane, I think, out of it. So, look, Army's gotten the better of Navy in five of the last, seven seasons. They've won the Commander-in-Chief's trophy. So, I feel like Army being the ranked team is, more of the brand, if you will, in this game, and the betting public should gravitate towards them. But Navy at seven, I think, would be a take for me.
So I'll just remember this, and now it's a different story because Bryson Daly obviously is playing, and when these two teams met back in 2016, my first year on the Navy broadcast, it was the 14-game winning streak Navy had going into that game against the Black Knights, and Army won. Now, Navy had just lost their quarterback, Will Wirth, to injury. So I believe, if memory serves me correct, young Malcolm Perry was mm-hmm. starting that day as a true freshman. But I think the reason I bring that up, Navy played in the AAC championship game and Army just played in the AAC championship game. So Navy's had two full weeks to prepare for this game and Army has not, which is kind of a flip. Because in recent years, Wes, when Army was an independent, they kind of structured their schedule to ensure they had ample time to prepare for Navy, and now they're coming off of a game over Tulane. Lastly, as you pointed, motivation and focus is never going to be an issue. However, Jeff Munkin's name has been floated out there to a number of jobs. West Virginia, I think he was up for North Carolina. Obviously, he's not going to get that, so just keep an eye on that if Jeff Munkin is still the head coach of Army. But focus is never an issue. I just think from a number standpoint, I think you're getting Army at its all-time peak. And, it's worth noting this, and I know our colleague JVT loves doing this when looking at the betting market. DraftKings had this number 5 days ago, 2.5, and it's now 6.5, 7. So that's a pretty drastic move for 1 week when nothing has changed between Army and Navy.
Yeah, no question. I think a lot of recency bias in that line for how they took apart Tulane, who looked like they were the best team in the American most of the year, even though Memphis probably playing the best football, at least at the end of the season. So, I think definitely a little bit of overreaction here. And look, when in doubt, when you got a low total, more often than not, you're at least going to gravitate, at least your first look, whether it's a bet or not, is going to be on the underdog.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, let's get into a couple bowl games that are going to happen before we hit record next week. And we could also hit on just philosophy. Let's start with that. Bowl philosophy now, Wes, with so many opt-outs, it's flying around. We saw Francisco Mendoza, that's just a top of mind. He hits the portal for Cal. How do you go about betting bowl games nowadays when if you miss out on a good number, it can move fast and furious?
Yeah, look, it used to be more situational. It's why I really love the bowl season. And now it's not as much situation. Like maybe there's a couple of spots out there where it's like, okay, you handicap who is excited to be here. You can go up and down the numbers and all the metrics, but it's like, okay, who's really excited to be here? Who's getting that name team that maybe just missed the playoff or, lost in their conference championship game. So like an example of that might be like the Pop-Tarts Bowl, like Iowa State and Miami, even though Iowa State lost in their championship game in the Big 12, Miami is still Miami. Like that's still a brand name. So you would expect maybe the Cyclones would be the more motivated team in that one. And, in terms of players, you used to kind of be like, okay, hopefully suspensions don't drop, guys got in a bar fight over break or, guys that didn't make grades. And then the last several years, you started to get more of the opt-outs before even the portal existed, the opt-outs of who's going to prepare for the draft, where it's like, okay, if you know that you're a first round pick, you're probably not going to play in the Humanitarian Bowl. That's an old name for the bowl up
in Boise.
It's
now the famous Idaho Potato Bowl.
Yes, yeah, but you're probably not going to play in that game if you know, okay, I'm going to be like the second receiver drafted, which means I'm going to be like top 15 at the bare minimum. But now with the portal, it absolutely has changed. And I used to like to bet some of these earlies knowing that, okay, I'm going to get the number in my way because everybody's going to think the same. At least, you know, some of the more regular bettors are going to be like, okay, this team's going to be way more motivated than this other team to go to this bowl game. Or you got a team that hasn't made a bowl game in a few years and it's like, they're going to be really excited. But now you got to wait. I think you got to wait almost to like the day before the game or game day. Like, I've got a couple that I bet, but and one we're going to talk about in a minute, I've already got the worst of the number, unfortunately, because I was just going by the matchup and, you know, playing a little injury speculation. And that doesn't necessarily work. So you want to be careful, because I found myself in a couple games last year having to buy out and just take a juice loss because I'm like, okay, I'm on the dead wrong side here. So, yeah, you got to be a little careful. You don't want to totally fire at the entire board here and exercise, I think, a little bit of caution, because a lot of this stuff is going to change and some of this is going to move immediately on news, and sometimes it's going to move a little bit too much. We'll see one example, I think, this morning as we record, I believe was the Louisville Washington game. That's the Sun Bowl in El Paso, and Tyler Shuck is not going to go for Louisville, their quarterback. So now this went from like 5 down to as low as 2.5, and then it's like, okay, you know, I understand why that moved, but you're always going to get a couple of these situations in bowls where the backup steps up. And you also have to look at the coaching, you know, which assistants are moving for new jobs as well.
Well, case in point, last year, right? You mentioned Louisville. Who did they play last year in their bowl game? Miller Moss, right? And, you know, everyone thought that it would be a massive drop-off when Caleb Williams wasn't playing, and Miller Moss threw for like a school record.
Yeah, set
Louisville.
The Holiday Bowl record for touchdown passes, and USC won that one outright. So yeah, you got to be careful, because the market's always going to react on news, no matter what it is. But you don't necessarily always have to follow it. Sometimes you can wait until the end and come back the other way. And there's a couple scenarios that I think are going to present themselves throughout the bowl season.
Yeah, I talked about this game yesterday and I put it in the betting guide, and we'll see how it plays out. But I bet Michigan against Alabama. I took 11.5. 11s are still out there. But Jalen Milroe, from the sounds of it's coming back next year. But then I was listening to other folks. Could he hit the portal? We don't know. So, you know, be careful. Don't go crazy. You know, if you're going to go full unit, maybe you wait until we get closer to the kickoff. But I will add one more bet, and you mentioned Army. So I'm looking to go against Army this weekend. I got the 7 earlier this week. I think the 7s will resurface. But I love betting on service academies and bowl games, because there's going to be no opt-outs. They're going to be motivated. And I know this is an inflated number, but there's a 13.5 still hanging out there at FanDuel. So if you're in a state that has FanDuel, I would still play it at this number. Wes, when I look at Marshall, I don't know who the hell's going to be playing this football game. Right. Everyone on their team is in the portal. Charles Huff, if you missed it, Marshall went out, won the Sun Belt on Saturday night. And shouts to Grace Remington. She came on the VSIN College Football Tailgate Show and gave out Marshall plus the points, and they won the game outright. So great job by her on that one. Charles Huff, we knew he was leaving. He did leave, but they went out, won the Sun Belt. That all being said, everybody has hit the portal here for Marshall. And when you're playing a team like Army, and look, I did sidelines for the Independence Bowl last year. This game kicks off at 8:15 local time. It's cold as hell.
Yep.
And you're now facing a triple option attack with Bryson Daly, and you're not going to know what the hell's coming at you. He's going to pound on this team. So I think alt lines could be a look for this one. But if I know that you're late to the party, but I still think anything under 2 touchdowns is worth a look for me here. And especially, we talked about this yesterday, if you're in those confidence pools out there, like, you know, your company or you're doing on ESPN.com, whatever it may be, I think the number one most confident play of the bowl season should be Army. I would be absolutely stunned if they don't win, and they don't win going away against a Marshall team that I don't who the hell's showing up to that game? That's the biggest question.
Yeah, you, by the way, Marshall is down to a pair of freshmen on the roster at quarterback because Braylon Braxton in the portal, Stone Earl, Cole Pennington, the son of Marshall legend Chad Pennington. And I'm just looking at so many starters, starting corner, starting running back, A.J. Turner, who missed the championship game, by the way, in the Sun Belt, starting receiver, starting safety, starting corner, starting linebacker, and then guys that have played, you know, a few hundred snaps that maybe aren't starters. So your depth takes a hit as well. So, yeah, and look, you know, with Army and Navy, you're never really getting opt-outs, obviously. No. That's not part of the agreement when you go to a service academy. So, I don't know the personnel that's going to be playing. And then plus Marshall, who's going to be remaining from that staff. Because it could be bare bones, because some are going to go with Coach Huff down to Hattiesburg at Southern Miss, and then some are maybe going to go elsewhere. So you've always got this bare bones staff that's trying to put a game plan together, especially for a triple option. Yeah, this I damn sure would not be taking Marshall. I mean, you know, you're laying the worst of it, but it would be right. Army or nothing.
And I wouldn't be surprised if this continues to grow. So if you can get the FanDuel number at 13.5, I would say go for it. 14.5, you're starting to get a little rich there in that one. All right, before we get out of here, Wes, let's just touch on a couple bowl games that we will see before we talk next week. We've got South Alabama and Western Michigan in the Salute to Veterans Bowl. This will be on Saturday night at 9 p.m. in Montgomery, Alabama, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. local time. The number is now back to 8. So I think you were alluding to it. Gio Lopez, we thought he might be out for this game. I guess I don't know if 100% he's playing in the game, but he said he's not leaving, right? He's coming back for another year. So the Jaguars lay an 8 against Western Michigan down at the old Crampton Bowl in Montgomery, Alabama.
Yeah, and I took 7 here, so I'm on the wrong side of the number. And, you know, you're going to be, at least the way this bowl season is, in a few of these games. Everybody remembers South Alabama last year. They won their first bowl game. Remember, they beat Eastern Michigan 59-10 last year, outgained them by like 500, almost 500 yards. First bowl for Major Applewhite as the head coach here, and first bowl for Lance Taylor against Western Michigan. I went on the, you know, that maybe Gio Lopez was not going to play at quarterback. He looks like he is, in fact, going to play. Bothwell, the running back, did enter the portal for South Alabama. But yeah, I thought it was a little rich, just even, but you know, not even on the Gio Lopez. I thought the number was at least a little bit rich just because of what we saw with South Alabama last year destroying Eastern Michigan. And then Western Michigan also got off to, I think, a really hot start in the MAC season. They were the most experienced team, by the way, coming back this year. They had 17 starters. Second year, you always improve from that first year to second year. At least that's your most notable improvement. They had a tough non-conference. They got beat at Ohio State. They got beat at Wisconsin. Won their first four games, then lost their next three. Had to win against Eastern Michigan in the finale, I believe, to just go ahead and get to bowl eligibility. So, you know, they struggled a little bit on defense, but it was part and parcel of the quarterback. And then I feel like these two teams, at least on paper, relatively even here. South Alabama a little bit better on the offensive side of the ball. Schedule of strength was basically the same. So I took the dog. I'm not going to buy out of it necessarily here, even though I'm getting maybe about a point worse of the number. Thought South Alabama was a little bit inflated here. Western Michigan hadn't been to a bowl since 2021 when they beat Nevada up in Detroit by a handy margin. So still going to stick with Western Michigan, but not something I have a ton of confidence in at this standpoint.
All right, next week we'll just hit these three games and we could talk about the other ones when next week rolls around. By the way, keep an eye on the Cure Bowl. That's Friday the 20th. If Rich Rod ultimately does leave for West Virginia, Tim Albin, the head coach of Ohio, has already bolted for Charlotte. But speaking of coaching changes, West Virginia fired Neil Brown, and they are now catching 3 against Memphis. This is the Frisco Bowl on Tuesday the 17th. So Memphis across the board laying 3 here against the Mountaineers. I haven't seen any opt-outs for Memphis. And the last time we saw Memphis, boy, they look pretty darn good whooping up on Tulane. So do the Tigers keep it rolling here with Seth Hennigan and company, from all accounts, going to play in this game next Tuesday night?
Yeah, and I might end up being on money line real small here with Memphis. I know you're not getting the best in the number because it's changed with the West Virginia coaching change. But look, I think Memphis is kind of motivated to finish strong here. They certainly, when you saw them on Thanksgiving night as double-digit home underdogs, took it to Tulane pretty good. And Ryan Silverfield's been very good in bowls, 3-0 straight up and against the number. Remember, he won in 19 when he was the interim when Mike Norvell bolted for Florida State. So Chad Scott's going to be the interim head coach here. He is the offensive coordinator for West Virginia. And Memphis is a veteran team, too. This is an older team that brought back 17 starters. So I think when you have seniors that are engaged here that know that this is going to be their last game, I think they're certainly going to be motivated. They can certainly fling the ball with Seth Hennigan, and West Virginia not very good in terms of a pass defense. I just think Memphis has the edge, and except for like the quality of competition, schedule of strength with a group of five against a Big 12 team is going to be vastly different. But I think Memphis definitely has the edge here. I know you're not getting the best of the number, but I think they're going to win this game in Frisco.
All right, last two games we'll hit on. We've got the Boca Raton Bowl taking place at FAU Stadium. This will be on Wednesday, the 18th, 5:30 local kickoff there, Eastern time. James Madison now out to we'll call it a 9-point favorite. There's some 8.5 still out there. Circa sits at 9.5. Western Kentucky's gotten a litany of opt-outs here, transfer portal guys, including their starting quarterback, Caden Velkamp. He is not going to be playing. TJ Finley, their backup, he's not going to be playing. So I don't know who the hell is playing quarterback right now for this particular game. So that's why we've seen such a massive move. But Western Kentucky, who just lost in the Sun Belt Championship by 40, they look like they will be a pretty limited squad taking on James Madison, who a year ago, remember, this was a team that lost your guy, Kurt Cignetti. A lot of the players still played in the bowl game, but they were playing Air Force. They lost that game. I think you get a pretty decent effort from James Madison, even though I believe they're without their starting quarterback.
Yeah, Alonzo Barrett doesn't look like he is going to go. I believe it's going to be Billy Atkins that is going to be starting for James Madison. But I agree with the market move here. I think not only the portal casualties for Western Kentucky, but I also think James Madison, those that stayed on the staff and those that stayed to play for James Madison, look, they're seeing all their buddies now in the college football playoff with Indiana. I know there was a remark this week, I think it might have been from Tyson Lawton, who is now with the Indiana program, saying, look, if we had all stayed, if Kurt Cignetti and the staff and we had all stayed at James Madison, we'd be the group of five team in the playoff this year. And I can't say that he's wrong, because this was a really good team last year that was undefeated for a large part of the season. And, you know, maybe they would have been, but it's not. And we're glad to have them at Indiana for sure. But I think the guys that are left over are kind of like, you know what, we didn't win our bowl game last year, and those that suck around, we're motivated this time around. So I do think you get a motivated team here in Boca Raton with James Madison. Now, you're having to pay an extra tax, though. I think the lowest number's 8, mostly 8.5 in the market. But I think the market has it right here on JMU.
All right, let's wrap on this. The L.A. Bowl, I believe, hosted by Gronk, presented by Gronk, something involving Gronk. He is involved in this one. SoFi Stadium, it's Cal and UNLV. UNLV, of course, goes up to the Smurf Turf last weekend. They fall short to Boise State. If they had won that game, they would have been headed to the college football playoff. Instead, they lost, and they also lost their coach. Barry Odom is moving on. He's headed to Purdue. Interesting situation brewing here regarding offensive coordinator Brennan Marion, who last I checked had scrubbed all his social media of UNLV. However, JBT just let me know he believes that Marion is going to be coaching in the bowl game. So we will see how this all plays out. The number had gone up to 4.5 in favor of Cal, but then we got news on Wednesday morning that Fernando Mendoza, the quarterback for Cal, is hitting the transfer portal. So this game is kind of all over the place. You know, I know coaches or teams that lose their coaches historically don't fare all that well in the postseason. That said, man, it was intriguing to take UNLV north of a field goal. Right now, probably a stay away for me, but this one's kind of all over the place because last check, I haven't seen any real opt-outs from UNLV, and maybe, you know, the positive is that this game's happening early. I would think that Ricky White certainly could be a guy that wouldn't play in this bowl game for UNLV, but what do you make of this one back down to 1.5 with Mendoza now out for Cal?
Yeah, they finally get UNLV in this LA Bowl, and Jimmy Kimmel's not a part of it. Of course, grew up here in Vegas, did attend UNLV for a year, Clark High School graduate. So, yeah, I don't know what to make of this, Tim, because I was leaning toward Cal, thinking that Mendoza was going to play and that UNLV, it's like, man, we were just that close to the college football playoff, even though they did lose by 2 touchdowns, but they were 60 minutes away from being in the college football playoff. And now they're not. Now you're playing in an early bowl game before the holidays. Coach Odom's leaving. Some of the staff you would think is going with him. I don't know if Brennan Marion, the offensive coordinator, is. He's kind of scrubbed UNLV from his socials, and he was not named the interim coach. So, you know, when you're looking at UNLV, Jackson Woodard, by the way, their star linebacker and really the leader of the defense, said he's going to play. So I saw that yesterday. So that's good for the Rebels. Ricky White is the guy that you're keeping an eye on, the wide receiver, their star receiver. So that's certainly one that you want to watch here. But Cal's a little banged up on that offensive line, too. So that is certainly a concern. Chandler Rogers, by the way, is the backup, and he got hurt in the last game of the season. So this has come back on UNLV. This is not something I'm willing to give out a play on yet, because we're monitoring the news out here in Las Vegas and seeing what is going to happen with this coaching staff. How motivated are these guys? It is a, I was about to say Pac-12, but it's an ACC opponent now, by the way. But a lot of these UNLV kids are West Coast kids that probably dreamed of playing in the old Pac-12 or, you know, wanted to play at a California school, whether it's USC, UCLA, Cal, Stanford, Oregon, wanted to play at those schools, Arizona State, et cetera, and they end up at UNLV in the group of five. So sometimes you get that group of five opponent that's motivated. You know, and UNLV this year did beat a couple of those, did beat Kansas this year, almost beat Syracuse. But I think UNLV did very well this year when they stepped up in class against group of five competition. So from that standpoint, you got to think that they're going to be motivated. Houston, another one that they beat on the road in the opener. So you beat two Big 12 teams. So I kind of, now I'm leaning Rebels a little bit, but Tim, when I go back and forth on a game, usually I stay out of it and maybe get involved in play or like a second half type wager.
Yeah. And I'll mention this, news happens so fast. And when I saw the Mendoza news, I immediately jumped on the best number I could find, which was 3, 1.5. Now it would be like you mentioned, I would probably lean UNLV. I think at this point, and we'll wrap on this, if you've missed out on the good number, would you say it's fair to say just wait till all the information comes out? Because at this point at 1.5, if you want to bet UNLV, make sure that Brennan Marion is calling plays for the offense. Let's make sure that Ricky White is playing at wide receiver. I think at this point, there's no need a week out to rush to play it. We've missed the good number, so I would sit on it, and then come game day, you've got more information coming out, and maybe you're able to grab, maybe, I don't know if it gets to a pick or something like that, but I still think you're not missing necessarily the worst of it when it comes to this one.
No, that's a very good point too, because then when all the information comes out, then you can get into your traditional handicap where it's like, okay, who's motivated to be here? What are the different statistical angles and advantages for this game? And then we get into like the old school bowl handicapping that we all enjoyed so much for so many years.
No doubt about it. Well, Wes, once again, the enemy the next couple of weeks here before the Irish take on Indiana. Next week, Wes and I we will have, I can almost guarantee you, the best Indiana Notre Dame preview you will find anywhere. We'll do that next Wednesday. We'll do a full in-depth breakdown. We'll get into the other quarterfinals as well, and I'm sure we'll have plenty of other news as well, too. All right, another podcast tomorrow. Matt Eumanns and I will break down some early bowl plays, early thoughts on the quarterfinals. Word on the street, Stanford Steve might be popping on the podcast tomorrow, so that'll be positive as well. But Wes, always appreciate it, my friend, and we'll talk to you next week.
Tim, good to be with you.
There he is, Wes Reynolds, the pride of Indiana University, and hoping to get out to South Bend in 9 days. Please rate, review, and subscribe. Thanks to producer Ryan, as always, for putting this together. This has been the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.